So, last week we began a new series on prosperity for the new year, and we are using primarily Catherine Ponder's book, Open Your Mind to Prosperity. And by the way, the books did come in this week, so they're on Jane's desk. If anyone would like to purchase one, they'll be out there after service. And in the book, Open Your Mind to Prosperity, Ponder, if you remember from last week, Ponder suggests that before we can open our minds to God's abundance, we must release what no longer serves us by cleansing our consciousness and clearing out our litter in the physical world, our clutter, I should say, in the physical world. Did anyone work on clutter this week? Did anybody work? I did, a little bit. I found a few items in my closet and in some drawers to find a new home for, and it's a good feeling, isn't it? And yet, sometimes it's a little hard to release things. It's hard enough to release our physical belongings, and I think it's even harder to release those mental images in our head that we might not need to let go of. In fact, I saw a comic recently by Baby Blues. Maybe some of you saw this. Zoe says to her dad while he's cooking something on the grill, she says, "My friend Dakota's family is vegan." And he says, "That's nice." And then Zoe says, "I think we should be vegans too." And Dad says, "Well, okay, but you'll have to give up hamburgers and pepperoni pizza." So Zoe thinks about it for just about a half a second, and then she says, "In that case, let's just stick with whatever religion we are now." And Dad says, "Deal." So Catherine Ponder says that as we let go of these old habits and patterns, we create a vacuum. She calls it the vacuum law of prosperity. We create a vacuum for all that we desire. And as we clear away the clutter, the first step then is to mentally prepare, engage in that mental preparation for our good. She says that success is 80% mental preparation and only 20% action. Have you heard that before? Well, actually, I did a little research to see if people are thinking that's still true since this book was written, and it turns out it is. People do think it's still true. They still embrace the concept. Among them, best-selling author Tony Robbins, who cites the 80-20 rule in many of his books, and also adds, first and foremost, your mind has to be set. Your mind has to be set. Ponder agrees. She says, stop looking to people and conditions for your prosperity. Work on your own consciousness, knowing that God, perfect divine energy, is your source and your only source. Your loving creator, Ponder says, has provided the substance of the universe. She calls it gold dust. Provided the substance of the universe, the gold dust that you can use to shape and form your prosperity. You are a spiritual and mental being, and you live from the inside out through your minds. She says, as you become definite about prosperity, it becomes definite about you. So today we're going to look at two specific strategies that Ponder suggests to mentally create our prosperity. The first one is in writing. Now just relax. Your seventh grade English teacher is not going to review it. Nobody's going to look at it for grammar or spelling. This is just for you, okay? She says, sit down and write down your desires of good. Revisit your list every day, revising it, reflecting about it, and expanding upon it. And you will find that this practice will pin down your mind to the truth, and you will be able to demonstrate results. The way to overcome negative circumstances in your life, Catherine Ponder says, is to set a goal in writing. So as we formulate and listen to the desires of our heart, Ponder reminds us that the root word of desire is of the Father. That's actually what the word desire means. She says, and Linda used this in her prayer today, it is the good pleasure of the Father to give you the kingdom. And she adds, it should be your good pleasure to receive it here and now. But here's the question. Here's the question that has plagued people for centuries. How can I tell if my desires are from the Father or if they're from my own human ego? Anybody ever wonder that? Sometimes it's really hard. I mean, we really have to do a lot of prayer and reflection to figure that out. In terms of financial prosperity, and as we said last week, prosperity is not only financial, but in terms of financial prosperity, it seems like too often we confuse the means and the end. Human beings created money. We created money a long time ago as a tool for barter throughout history and across the globe. Long before gold or cash or electronic means of money today, long before they were in circulation, does anybody know what the very first form of money was? Anybody want to guess? What did I hear? Food? That's a good guess. That's sort of right, in a way. It was cows, sheep, camel, and other livestock. That's what the first form of money was. Once the society became more agrarian, then it became food, grains, and all of that. Eventually, at some point, people started using, this is a picture of that, it's cowrie shells. They're like mollusk shells, and then eventually lumps of gold and silver, because they were slightly more convenient than carrying around a cow, right? Somehow, through the ages, however, it seems like we got caught up believing that money is more than a tool. I mean, we sometimes think of it as being more. We give it more power. In order to be truly prosperous, Ponder says, we need to think about every material goal in terms of our true, deep, inner desire. For example, let's just say somebody wants to buy a new house. That's one thing they really want, is a new house. Well, that's a wonderful goal, and it probably represents more. It might represent security. It might represent comfort, serenity, a place for loving family and friends together. It's more than just the physical house. And if one wants a motorcycle, for example, the inner goal might be of freedom or of escape from sitting in the cubicle all day, maybe to the joy of God's sunshine on your face. You see what I'm saying? It's more than just the item. And when we are absolutely only focused on money and things, if that's our end goal, even when we get those things, somehow we don't quite feel fulfilled. So Ponder suggests that we take our goal and lift it to the highest possible spiritual meaning. Now, that doesn't mean, and I don't want to be misinterpreted as saying, that we cannot have the luxuries in our lives. We can. We can have all the luxuries that we wish for. It just means, as Jesus told the people gathered on the hillside during the Sermon on the Mount, that we are to first seek the kingdom, and then all we need and all we desire will be added. Emily Cady, in her book Lessons on Truth, wrote, "Desire is God, meaning divine energy. Desire is that divine energy tapping at the door of your mind, trying to give you greater good." And Ponder adds that if we want to analyze whether our desires are divine or not, we need to realize that divine desires tend to be deeply embedded. They don't go away. They last over time. So if you have a desire in your heart and you've had it for years and years, it's very possible that that is a divine desire. She says we can get definite about our divine desires by writing them down. Your definite written words dissolve all the obstacles and barriers on the visible and invisible planes of life and open the way for your good to manifest. So here's her advice. Make your list about those things you really want and an awareness of the thoughts and feelings they represent. And here's something really important. As you look at your list of what you desire, make sure your desires are your desires and not what someone else thinks you should have. Too often we get programmed into other people's desires. Now, this is interesting. She suggests to keep your list private. Actually, in another book, she says you might share it with a prayer partner. But she says that you keep it private. It's a secret between you and the indwelling Christ. She reminds us that the words secret and sacred are actually from the same root. So, after you make your list then, be ready as you revisit it daily, she suggests, to change it as you're inclined to do so. And as the days pass, keep your mind open and receptive. You may decide that one of the items on your list needs to go, and you may add new items, and you may expound upon them. She says, be flexible, be adaptable, be willing to expand and improve your list. Actually, she suggests that you make three lists, okay? Can anyone guess what the first one is? What we talked about last week, what you might want to... Yeah, exactly. Give up. She says, first of all, as you create your prosperity in writing, you want to make a list about what you want to eliminate from your life. That's really important. And then secondly, you make the list about what you want to bring into your life, your dreams and your desires, your goals. And then thirdly, you make a list of what you are thankful for. Now, she also gives us some other questions to help us analyze about whether these desires are driven from the divine or from our ego. And here they are. Her first question is, are your desires legal? That's all she put. I personally didn't think that was enough, so I added moral and ethical. But anyway, I took a little license there. Are your desires legal, moral, ethical? In other words, are they going to hurt anyone else? Because I assure you, if they're going to hurt someone else, they're not from God, right? Secondly, and this is really important too, are they emotionally right for you? Are you emotionally ready to accept them as they come? I met with a bride and groom this week, we're going to get married later in the year, who said to me, oh my gosh, we're in our 30s, we so wish we'd found each other earlier. And I said, maybe if you'd met each other earlier, you wouldn't have met each other's emotional needs. You know, sometimes there's a divine timing of when we're ready to explore something. Thirdly, she says, are you willing to accept the responsibility that goes with having them? My grandmother used to always say, be careful what you wish for, you might get it, right? Are you really welcome? You know, it's not isolated. Are you open to accepting it all? And finally, what are you willing to give up to make room for them? She quotes Emerson from his essay on compensation, and I'm going to shorten it a little bit, for everything you gain, you lose something. So think of a goal that you've achieved recently in your life or a dream, and it's true. In order to move into it, there's probably was something you had to give up, even if it was just your old way of being. When Bob and I built our new house, I love the house we were exiting, and the very last day I remember walking through and having all the memories of all the kids gathered around for Christmas and all that, and I had to kind of say goodbye to that house in order to move forward. And I know we all have things like that have happened in our families. Finally, Under gives the advice that many of you have been in Unity or New Thought for a while already know. I can just hear Joe Warren saying this over and over again, and that is, at the bottom of your list, to protect your desires, you write, this or something better, God. You know, maybe you're praying for a used Ford to get to work, and the divine has a Mercedes in mind, right? You always kind of, you don't limit your prayers too much, or your wishes too much. And then I like this version of it. I release my list to the perfect outcoming of Christ consciousness now. I release my list. I let it go, and I'm open and receptive. So that's the writing one. And the second strategy that Ponder suggests is to mentally create your prosperity through pictures, in picturing your plan as fulfilled, even before it is fulfilled. Ponder emphasizes that the picturing power of the mind is one of the oldest devices known to humankind. She writes, prehistoric man carved out on the walls of the cave the food he desired to obtain, believing an unseen power would bring him the game, fowl, and fish for survival. Later, the Egyptians used the picturing power of the mind in their tombs. When a child of royalty was born, a tomb was started for the child. And on the walls of the tomb were painted pictures of the child's life, expected, what the people expected would happen in his life, up to his death. Events of the royal child, like him growing up, a wedding, winning wars, and having a happy, victorious life were all painted on the wall before the child was even 6 months old. And I don't have a picture for this, but I think it's interesting. More than 2,400 years ago, during the Golden Age of Greece, prospective mothers were surrounded in a room with beautiful pictures and statues so that the unborn children might receive health and beauty through their mother's mind pictures. Isn't that interesting? That was, you know, thousands of years ago. Although Ponder doesn't mention this in her book, many of you know that this whole idea of creating mental pictures of our desires means using one of our 12 powers. What power is that? Exactly, imagination. It's our power of imagination. Now, honestly, on the surface, I remember when I first studied the 12 powers and I saw imagination on there, I thought, oh, it doesn't sound quite as spiritual as the others, does it? Faith and love and wisdom and imagination. And really, people all the time sort of dismiss imagination, saying things like, oh, it's just your imagination, as if that were a bad thing, right, or a childish thing. Yet this incredible divine gift is important in creating our prosperity. How many things in our lives come to pass because we first imagine them? Charles Fillmore tells us in his book, The 12 Powers, when the faculties of mind are understood in their threefold relation, spirit, soul, and body, it will be found that every form and shape originated in the imagination. So that makes it pretty powerful. And so, by myself. One way to activate that power of imagination, and I know a lot of you have practiced this probably, is visualization, popularized several years ago by a book and a video. Anybody know what I'm talking about? What is it? The Secret, that really, with amazing results. People read that book and they saw the video, and all over the world they began visualizing everything from parking spaces to diamond jewelry to lucrative jobs. And at the time, many uni students were saying, it's no secret. Because it wasn't a secret to those of us who knew thought. Because our co-founder, Charles Fillmore, had written about the law of attraction, he'd written about it over 140 years ago, before the video came out in the book. And the law states that conditions and circumstances often manifest according to the feelings, thoughts, and images we already hold steadily in consciousness. Those of you who are taking Ann's class, Ann, take a deep breath. I hope they know this. What is that whole law of attraction based on? Which of our principles? Principle number 3. That's right. Principle number 3. Thoughts and mind held in kind tend to reproduce in our consciousness first and then in our outer world. So, I'm sure many of you are familiar with the technique. What you do is you simply form a mental picture of your goal, your dream, or your problem solved, seeing it solved along with, and this is important, along with the positive emotions that you're going to feel when your desire is accomplished. Modern metaphysicians believe that feeling is just as important, perhaps even more important than thought, and that feeling sometimes precedes our thoughts. We get a certain feeling and then we have a thought. So the way you do this is you take your dream or your goal and you see it in your mind, you feel the joy of its being, you celebrate its manifestation before it ever appears in your life. And how many times did Jesus the Christ model the power of spiritual insight over physical eyesight? Again and again and again. No wonder Albert Einstein said, imagination is more important than knowledge. Our power of imagination allows us to focus on creative energy to produce in the outer world that we already hold in our hearts and minds. We really have what amounts to a running movie screen in our heads, and the images flickering in our inner theater often determine what experiences we attract ourselves to in our outer lives. And how does this whole strategy of visualization work? How does principle number 3 work? Well, Albert Einstein and many other quantum physicists tell us that we live in a sea of energy, unlimited energy, where at any given time there are multiple outcomes for any event or circumstance, and multiple possibilities exist simultaneously, each outcome just waiting to be called into the focus of our awareness. In other words, from this infinite sea of possibilities in the universe, we tend to attract ourselves to what we picture. So the old saying that you all have heard again and again is true: where focus goes, energy flows. That's absolutely true. And Catherine Ponder even points out that this works not just in what we want to see manifest in our lives, but it also works in problems we have, problems we want to solve, life challenges. In fact, she says, we can picture, instead of fighting your problems, picture your way out of them. She writes, the picturing power of our mind turns your thinking from, I can't have this, I can't do this, to, or this will never happen to me, to the I can. Get the can't out of there and say, I can do this, this is mine to claim. She writes, deliberately picturing the good you want is the way to overcome all the problems in your life. And in the book, The Lost Mode of Prayer, Greg Braden tells the story of a Native American friend that he accompanied to go pray for rain. And they walked quite a distance throughout the city, throughout the village, over this dry, crusted earth to this sacred place, this secret, sacred place, where there had been kind of carved in the dry earth a circle. So the Native American just got there, took off his moccasins, stepped into the circle, turned to the north and the south and the east and the west, went into the silence for a few moments, and then just stepped out of the circle. And Greg Braden looked at him. He was expecting something a little more spectacular than that. And he said, is that it? I thought we were going to pray for rain. And the Native American said, I didn't ever say we were going to pray for rain. I said we were going to pray rain. And when I was in that circle, I could feel the rain beating down on my face. I could smell the rain as it hit the huts of all the people in the village. I could feel the mud from the rain squishing through my very toes. I felt the rain. And that is the power of visualization. That's how it works. You have to really feel it and anticipate it. And one specific visualization technique that Reverend Ponder suggests is one I bet a lot of you have used. She calls hers the Prosperity Wheel of Fortune. I have to figure out when the Wheel of Fortune show started and who stole that from whom. I'm not sure. But at any rate, it's the Prosperity Wheel of Fortune, she calls it. And it's very similar to a treasure map, a vision board, or a success board. How many of you have used that strategy? A lot of you have. I have too. So for those of you who are unfamiliar with it, you simply get a large poster board. Actually, you can't even do it in a journal, but a lot of people do it in a large poster board. And you cut out words and pictures that depict the desires on your list. And that's important. You don't just go looking for pretty pictures. You ask yourself, okay, what do I really want? Do I want to have a beach house in Cancun? Then you look through the travel magazines and you try to find a picture of a beach house and you put it on your list. And you can use words also. And here's an example of one from the internet. That one's pretty full, but that's okay. Ponder says, use big, colorful, beautiful poster boards and pictures if you want big, colorful, beautiful results in your life. So she even advocates not using white poster board. Mine was on a white poster board, but I didn't know that then. She tells a story in Open Your Mind to Prosperity about a college professor who made a small, crowded, drab, colorless success map of travels. He wanted to travel abroad. And it worked, she said. It worked perfectly. He had a crowded, drab, colorless trip. Right? So be careful. Catherine Ponder says we need to use the power of color in our treasure maps. If you buy a copy of the book or if you have one, she gives really specific directions to do this on page 73. And if you don't intend to buy a book, I actually type them for you and I'll have them on the table after service of just real specific ways to do this. And next week, so this week we talked about just mentally creating your prosperity through what? Through, first of all, writing, and then secondly, through pictures, visualization, right. Next week, there's one more specific strategy that we'll talk about, and then we'll talk about what she calls the secret of permanent prosperity. For now, let's just all remember that we live in an abundant universe. God is good, and all God's goodness is there for us. We can, in any moment in our lives, turn our pivotal souls away from images that tell us that we're in lack or trouble. We can turn them away to the power and presence of God. And in that way, all obstacles and barriers to our success are divinely dissolved the minute we turn away from them. Would you affirm that with me? Can everybody see the screen? All obstacles and barriers to my success are divinely dissolved now. So exercising our power of imagination, along with the faith to behold things that our physical eyes do not see, we can embrace the spiritual and mental laws of prosperity, and we can use them and will use them to transform our lives. Using the power of the mind, as we move forward, we draw ourselves to that eternal good that already exists, and we can create prosperity in every single aspect of our lives. And so it is. So let's just take a moment now to just affirm the source of all good, all abundance, and all prosperity. For those of you here for the first time, this is printed in your bulletin. There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.